It is Wednesday, March 16th, 2022, and I call this meeting of the House Higher Education Committee to order. The CLA will take the roll.
Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi, present. Vice Chair Christensen.
Present.
Christensen, present. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, present.
O'Neill, present. Representative Albright.
Albright, present.
Albright, present. Representative Daniels.
Daniels, present.
Daniels, present. Representative Erickson. Representative Erickson. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, present.
Hansen, present. Representative Heintzeman.
Present.
Heintzeman, present. Representative Howard. Representative Howard. Representative Keeler.
Keeler, present.
Keeler, present. Representative Cleborne.
Cleborne, present.
Cleborne, present. Representative Kosnick.
Present.
Kosnick, present. Representative Crenshaw is excused. Representative Mason.
Mason, present.
Mason, present. Representative Meckland.
Meckland is present.
Meckland, present. Representative Neuer.
Neuer, present.
Neuer, present. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Sandell, present. Representative Sandsted.
Present.
Sandsted, present. Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Thompson, present. Representative Erickson. Representative Howard. And Representative Mason, or Erickson, I see, just joined the call, so yes. I will be you present.
Erickson is present.
And Madam Chair, with that, we have a quorum present.
Thank you very much. We now may have a motion to approve the minutes for March 15th, 2022.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Cleborne moves approval of the minutes for March 15th, 2022. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, the motion prevails and the minutes for March 15th, 2022 are approved. First on the agenda, we have House File 4210 from Representative Cleborne. We have 30 minutes scheduled for this bill, and we plan to wrap up at 3:35. I will move that House File 4210 be laid over for possible inclusion. We have before us House File 4210. Representative Cleborne, please present your bill to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I want to begin today with a debt of gratitude for all of the many individuals who helped me understand the need for this legislation and have worked to get us this far today. Families, students, faculty, college presidents, OHE staff, and experts in the field of higher education related to individuals living with intellectual disabilities. This bill has been over 2 years in the making and has had many, many conversations. It is a grassroots effort that started with Minnesota students who wanted to attend college in Minnesota but found limited opportunities. I want to thank my colleagues on both sides of our higher education table, and a special thanks to Representative O'Neill and Representative Daniels for taking my calls and talking with me about this legislation. I've learned much through this process, and I had to challenge my own biases regarding intellectual disabilities. Intellectual disabilities are not a one-size-fits-all. The Inclusive Higher Education Act will help colleges incorporate students who are capable and motivated to fully participate in Minnesota's current college course offerings and campus life. Opening inclusive higher education aligns the state's efforts to advance access to post-secondary education. It increases attainment rates and it improves adult outcomes for Minnesotans with intellectual disabilities to earn meaningful credentials and also to earn competitive wages in a career of their choice. All Minnesotans benefit when students with intellectual disabilities become credentialed employees, contributing to their community and our statewide economy. This bill does two things. It establishes a technical center that will provide expertise in inclusive higher education And two, it provides a competitive grant funding for Minnesota's 2- and 4-year colleges and universities to start inclusive higher education programs on their campuses. In your packets today and on the website, you will find numerous letters of support for the inclusive higher education from families, students, and outside organizations. With me today, Madam Chair, there are advocates who are supporting the Inclusive Higher Education Act, and I ask that we please move to their testimony at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cleavorn. And I will now call on each of your testifiers who have up to 2 minutes to provide their testimony. Please introduce yourself, Mary Huff, for the record, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi and committee members. My name is Mary Huff, and I'm here to testify in favor of House File 4210. I'm a parent advocate and co-leader of the Minnesota Inclusive Higher Education Consortium. The consortium is a parent-led collaborative of key stakeholders committed to expanding post-secondary education opportunities for Minnesotans with intellectual disabilities. The Gateway to College for People with Intellectual Disabilities opened in 2008 with the reauthorization of the Higher Education Opportunity Act. Since 2008, more than 300 colleges and universities across the U.S. have embraced inclusive higher education by including students with intellectual disabilities. Minnesota lags behind. With House File 4210, we have the opportunity to close this gap. Today, less than 3% of college-age Minnesotans with intellectual disabilities have access to college in Minnesota. House File 4210 takes direct aim at removing barriers to inclusive higher education by establishing a technical assistance center and providing competitive grant funding. House File 4210 is modeled after laws passed in Florida, Maryland, and Colorado. College is the pathway to more successful adult outcomes, irrespective of a person's disability. Students with intellectual disabilities, like any college student, experience personal growth and maturation. I am a parent of 4 young adults who are all pursuing post-secondary education. My daughter Jean is a student with an intellectual disability who wanted to go to college and pursue a career in communications. She wants to make career choices for herself, just like her siblings and peers. With no Minnesota 4-year college options, she made the difficult decision to attend college out of state. Although she is in her second year of college, it has not been easy. Her first choice was to stay in Minnesota. And many students with intellectual disabilities prefer to remain close to home and family while completing their post-secondary education. But Minnesota has limited choices. You can change that. I ask that you support House File 4210 so that Minnesotans with intellectual disabilities have access to inclusive higher education options across the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Now with us is Dupre Edwards. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Dupre Edwards. Thank you, Chair Bernardi and members. My name is Dupre Edwards. Thank you for the chance to testify today in the support of the House File 4210. I wanted to go to college and earn a credential in the performing arts. I like acting and music. I'm an older student and I have an intellectual disability. I still have a career in dreams. I want to have my own apartment. I enrolled in a 2-year college, took some classes, but it didn't work out. I was required to take basic classes, and I was not interested in the supports that were offered that made me feel like someone was doing the work for me. I was not part of the class. I ended up dropping out of my classes because it wasn't a good fit for me. I need flexibility in university design for learning, peers and mentors, study with alternative ways to show that I have mastered the class materials in inclusive higher education would provide me with supports that I need in college. However, there is not a Minnesota college that enrolls students with the intellectual disability that offers performing arts certificates or degree. Today, I have a part-time job as an upstream arts teaching artist. My coworkers all have post-secondary education in order for me to find a full-time job in performing arts that I want. I will need a college education, a college that is good fit for me and is located in the Twin Cities. It's accessible through public transportation and offers performing arts credential, enrolls students with an intellectual disability, and it's affordable. I want to benefit from paid internships and appointments and part of college certificates or degree. I want to learn and have a career in the performing arts, and we need more Minnesota college options for students like me to earn certificate and degree and have a career of choice and live more independently. I ask that you support the House file of 4210. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Edwards, for your testimony. And with us now is Bryn Sexton. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Bernardi and committee members, my name is Bryn Sexton, and I am hearing.
Girl.
Let me start again.
Yes.
Okay. My name is Bryn Sexton, and I am hearing. Thank you for the chance to give my testimony in support of House File 4210. What I want for my future is to become an American Sign Language interpreter by going to college after high school. I want an ASL certificate and to get a job and live with family or someone I know. I am searching for colleges near my home where I can earn an ASL certificate. I have 4 years of high school ASL classes. There are three Minneapolis colleges that I know of where I can continue studying ASL. And I have been on one tour. One school is very expensive, and the other two are community colleges. I would like to learn from a deaf teacher and meet some deaf friends. I plan to go to college, but because I have a disability, I worry about passing a test to get into college. This bill will open the doors for me to go to college and reach my dreams. I ask that you support House File 4210. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Sexton. Now we have before our committee Annette Romaldo. If you please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Bernardi and committee members, my name is Annette Romaldo, and I am honored to testify in support of House File 4210, which expands inclusive higher education in the state of Minnesota. I come before you today as the proud parent of a child with an intellectual disability, and I also have the honor to prepare Minnesota's next generation of educators as an assistant professor of special education at the University of Minnesota Duluth. Here's what we know in education. Research overwhelmingly demonstrates teaching students in inclusive settings promotes significant academic and social growth. Higher education is a well-documented path to increase lifelong outcomes, and yet persons with intellectual disabilities have the least access. Federal legislation in 2008 spurred a nationwide movement to increase such opportunities. And in response, states grew tens of programs, such as 26 initiatives in Florida. And yet Minnesota has only three such initiatives. What made the difference? Well, we know that legislative investment in and commitment to promoting equity in education is critical to improving the lives of all constituents. Florida's leaders passed legislation to provide funding to establish a technical assistance center and to support initiative startups and enhancement. Notably, the University of Central Florida, where I recently completed my doctoral preparation, hosts a national model of inclusive post-secondary education. I had the opportunity to work directly within this model and to gain experience with the National Coordinating Center in support of similar initiatives. Members of the committee, let's take the lead in inclusive higher education. Let's lead by funding a technical assistance center to help guide Minnesota's evidence-based inclusive higher education practices. And let's lead with competitive grants for institutes of higher education to help support initial startup costs or to enhance an existing initiative. I'm ready. I'm ready to join with colleagues across the state to promote comprehensive and inclusive post-secondary opportunities. And with your support, let's prepare all Minnesotans for lives of inclusion, lifelong education, and independence. Please support House File 4210.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And now we have Brian Valentini, and welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Hello, thank you for having me today. I am Dr. Brian Valentini. I am Assistant Professor of Special Education at St. Cloud State. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what is going on at St. Cloud State currently. For the past 4 years, we have been building towards establishing an inclusive higher education program for those with intellectual disability. We started with two research projects to explore the possibilities of doing such. One of those studies, we examined the makeup of Central Minnesota, where we surveyed parents in four local school districts. We had a strong respondent rate. We had nearly 88% of parents in Central Minnesota stating that they were interested in such a program. Our second survey then went out to the rest of the country, around 300 or so programs, and we surveyed program directors. And we just basically asked what types of services, what it took, what kind of funding was needed to create this program from the ground up. Our results led to conversations at the university level. We decided to partner with four different school districts. We have a wait list of over 100 parents that would be interested in a program at St. Cloud State University. With this funding, we would be ready to apply for any grants that might be part of this funding opportunity. We are ready to begin programming. We've applied for several federal grants. The feedback we've gotten from all of those grants has stated, as soon as you have programming available for students with intellectual disability, please apply again. So basically, we need startup funds at St. Cloud State University to provide things like staffing. We need teachers that are certified in K through 12 education to prepare things such as transition plans. We would like to establish things like peer mentor programs. We would like to hire staff to support individuals on campus, in dorms, in recreation-based programs. We would like to hire peers to do things like attend hockey games, go to basketball games, go to the rec center and have workout programs. So we have all kinds of ideas that we would like to establish at St. Cloud State University for people with intellectual disability. But the main block in this is funding. So with a bill like this, this would establish funding for our program, and then we would hope to support other programs around the country and here in Minnesota. So again, thank you for your time, and I'm really excited, and I hope this bill passes with all your support.
Well, thank you very much for your testimony. Now we'll go to members if they have any, and I just want to make sure, Representative Cleaver, do you have any other testifiers?
No, Madam Chair, those are the testifiers I believe that we have.
Thank you. And we have no public testifiers, and so I was going to go to member discussion and then have you wrap up. Is that a good plan? Is that what you were planning? Okay, so we are now going to go to member discussion for House File 4210. Are there any questions? Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll let Representative Koznick go first.
Sure. Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just wanted to confirm, like so many of these other bills that we've seen, mostly on the fiscal side, that there is an appropriation for ongoing spending beyond the current biennium. Is that correct?
Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Koznick. Yes, this does establish a base funding.
Okay,
thank you. Representative Koznick?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. We hear so many well-intentioned bills, this one included amongst the best of intentions. But for us, we did our two-year budgeting in the last cycle. So I could see maybe a one-time appropriation being made and negotiated, but this is growing, establishing a new committee, a new office, a new direction, and something that should be discussed in a budget year for ongoing spending, and that it just simply isn't the priority or the charge at this point. And so unfortunately, won't be able to support that part of the bill. The intention is fine, and I think probably could use a little bit more fleshing out, but if it's important that taxpayers see a big surplus, everybody's running to the Capitol looking for money. My Democrat colleagues across the aisle are consistently putting funds in the tails of these bills to continue ongoing spending even farther beyond establishing a new program, tying the hands of future legislators, and that's a problem. Taxpayers want to see the surplus returned to them. As much as we can. I'm not naive that there may be some negotiation to go on with that. But permanent, we have an opportunity and a charge and a responsibility for permanent long-term tax reform to keep our state healthy. The amount of spending that we are doing is just kind of mind-boggling every time we see a new program. And then to additionally create a new base going into this, I'm not sure where the direction is on that, if you think you're pulling a fast one on us or what. But for that reason, mostly, we cannot be supporting this kind of spending and growth in government. As I said, we've if you ask your taxpayers, we've spent enough quite a bit. So I will not be supporting the bill. But perhaps some of the suggestions would be better taken if there were some authors' amendments, because I don't see this going past the House floor.
Hearing no question in that, I'll go to Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I'll defer to Representative Albright. Let him go first.
Okay, we're playing musical chairs today, but that's just fine. We can handle that. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good afternoon to Representative Cleburne. Representative Cleburne, I just want to direct your attention to a couple of points that I've seen in the bill and just wondering if you could expand on them. The first is on line, where is it here? 5.15. It's actually under subdivision 3. Paragraph one, and I note offers, if you're there, just it denotes offers the necessary supports to students with an intellectual disability to access the same rights, privileges, experiences, benefits, and outcomes of a typically matriculating student. I'll only offer this to you, Representative Cleburne, and this is by no means a derogatory, but if I were a plaintiff attorney and I read that in the enacting language and I had an individual who did not feel as if they had realized the goals that were supported by that kind of a statement, do you feel that this invites litigation?
Representative Cleaborn.
Thank you. Representative Albright, I am not an attorney, but this was drafted with the assistance of those who are knowledgeable in this area. So no, I do not believe this invites litigation.
Representative Albright, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Cleaborn, I've looked through this in other bills, particularly between this committee and as well as the Jobs Committee, and early in my tenure, as well as Health and Human Services, we talk a lot about the American Disabilities Act and whether that be for job-related functions or access to the same availability to medical treatment and whatnot. Would not this bill, part and parcel, be considered as a proxy for the American Disabilities Act? And why I say that is, are we duplicating what the ADA already enacts and obligates higher learning education institutions to provide? And I'll end with that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. And was that a question, Representative Albright, or just a statement?
No, Madam Chair, I'd like her opinion in terms of whether it's duplicative of the ADA.
Okay. Representative Cleaborn.
One moment. I'm trying to find out the name of the educational, you know what, maybe if I would pivot to Mary Hoff, or if Julia is on the call. Here it is. I found it. This is enacted, this legislation is based on Act of Congress in 2008, which is the Higher Education Opportunity Act. And so that's where this is based. So it is not, I would not say it's duplicative of, it is in addition thereto. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I now can move to Representative Daniels. Are you ready?
I certainly am. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Excellent.
First off, thank you to the author for reaching out to me today to explain the bill a little bit better. I want to start off on a positive note, so thank you for that. Also, shout out to former Chair Bud Nornes. He was very supportive of advancing people with disabilities to further themselves. And so don't want to forget what work he's done. I don't know if you know, but I've done several bills to try to advance young people to go on to secondary college and had very good success. We did the Bethel bill, so there's a two-year program there. We reached out and expanded it to state colleges and the University of Minnesota. But that was 6 or 7 years ago, and to this day, I don't think there's anybody enrolled in those programs. And I'm not sure if it's a staffing problem or what it is, but I'm a little surprised because there's a lot more students they could do. I know I talked to one of the workers at Minnesota Independent College and Community. And if they could get more funding, they could just use that as a formula to have more students. So if we gave them $1 million more per year in funding, they could double their students. So that on a good note, and then I'm going to go to some of the things that we talked about. First off, I'm a little confused on what the director's responsibility and how much salary he would be getting, because there's a $250,000 appropriation for that. So do you have any idea what's happening with that position?
Representative Cleaborn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. May I please ask testifier Mary Hoff to address this question, please? She knows more about the plans for the director's position. Thank you.
Ms. Hoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Daniels. The funding for the Technical Assistance Center does include compensation for a director within that center, but there are other related expenses, and just in terms of the overall different activities of the Technical Assistance Center. It's not just a director, and that's it.
Thank you. Representative Daniels, do you have a follow-up?
I have a few. Thank you, Madam Chair. Then to the author, Representative Cleavorn, on the 2.12, that's number 10 on the what it provides for the students. And we had talked about on the phone earlier that this was different than the MICC program.
Yes.
And it basically added a degree, a group degree, onto what MICC and Bethel are already doing. And I remember, I thought your intent was to have it different than those programs. So could we maybe talk about an amendment if you want this to go through? We have to tighten up some other language, but would you be willing to maybe make it for a degree program and not compete with Bethel and MICC and in that area of a certificate or non-degree credential? Would that be a possibility?
Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Daniels. Because this is being laid on the table, I would be held over for possible inclusion. I would be happy to continue to work with you on this bill and whatever concerns any member of the committee has. It's important that we move forward. And as I expressed to you earlier in our call, the idea is not that we take away any of the good work that's being done at Bethel Build or at MICC, which are differing programs. This is to make our higher education institutions that we currently have, our Minnesota institutions that we currently have, accessible. As I understand it right now, if we add up all of the positions that are available in this state for individuals with intellectual disabilities, there are a total of 90 positions. There are as many as 5,000 Minnesotans who are in need of these services. So to create more positions is not to take away from either of the two programs that you've mentioned. And I think it's really important for people to know. And as I said, in challenging my own my own thoughts about what is intellectual disability. There are people who are at all levels of performance in that description. And so there are some who will matriculate with four-year degrees. There will some who go on to get master's degrees and some who will go on to get PhDs. It is not to limit, but to enhance. So if you have ways to enhance this bill and make it better for people to have more opportunities, I'm more than happy to have that conversation with you.
Representative Daniels, did you have another question? We have 2 minutes left for this bill, and we want to save time to have Representative Cleaver wrap up. Did you have another question to fit in?
Not really a question, more of a, just the language in there is kind of, I'd say, all over the place. And I before this actually gets closer to you going to the floor, there's a number of changes I'd like to see. One's on the funding, where we put in the 2024, put in the tails for permanent funding. And I think since we're starting out, a lot of times we do a pilot program and see if it actually works and go that way. And then if it works, then we'll maybe consider permanent funding. But before it gets any much further, I'd love to sit down and go over the bill. There's a lot of good ideas in here, and unfortunately, there's some I just don't understand very well, and would like to work those out. The intent, I think, is great. I've been working for 8 years to get youngsters with intellectual disabilities, road to success, and it's been working quite well. So I applaud the effort. I think we need to work on it a little bit more. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Cleavorn, would you like to make some closing statements?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I would just like to briefly address a few of the comments made by Representative Daniels. And I so appreciate the work that he has done in the past. And I'd also like to recognize former Vice Chair Lori Pryor. It was her work that actually introduced me to this this need in our state. So I want to give a shout out to her too. This is not a new program that we have no idea how it works. It is already operating in other states. We heard today testimony that St. Cloud is more than willing to step up. They have 100 families waiting. In your packets today, you will see letters of support from the University of Minnesota Institute of Community Integration. You will see a letter of support from the University of Massachusetts in Boston, and you will see a letter of support from the University of Minnesota, University Mankato, from the interim dean. This is work that we know already. The science, the data is there. There are some great reports. I'm happy to communicate with any member of our committee. Members, our families have been waiting way too long, and I ask for your support as we go forward, that I am open to making this bill better. We are well past the time of serving our families. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And with that, I will ask you to please lay the bill over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Cleavorn. Hearing no further discussion, I will renew my motion that House File 4210 be laid over for possible inclusion. The bill is laid over. Okay, I'm passing the gavel to Vice Chair Christensen.
Next on the agenda, we have House File 4203 from Chair Bernardi. We have 25 minutes scheduled for this bill, and we will plan to wrap up at 4 o'clock. I will move that House File 4203 be laid over for possible inclusion. We have before us House File 4203. Chair Bernardi, please present the bill to the committee.
Thank you, Vice Chair Christensen, and it's a pleasure to be able to present this bill today. I attended the tribal-state relations training that this past year that was offered to Minnesota legislators, and it was an excellent training. It was a great way to develop government-to-government relations and to collaborate and work with one another. At that meeting, I got to develop relationships with the different tribal members and leadership throughout the state, and I learned a lot. And one of the parts of the training, and I just pulled it up here to explain what it was, they had training about, and there was just a powerful presentation made about the generational effects of Indian boarding schools using, and they used an exercise representing seven generations of women teaching deep effects of trauma endured by Indian people. And we learned a lot, and it was, like I said, it was very powerful and moving. And for those of you that don't know, and I think many on this committee know, but maybe some people are watching, that the United States took nearly 11 million acres of land from approximately 250 tribes, bands, and communities through over 160 violence-backed treaties and land secessions. The Morrill Act of 1862 granted that land to states to be sold for the benefit of fledging universities is raised nearly $18 million for 52 institutions by early 20th century. When adjusted for inflation, this adds up to roughly $500 million. The Morrill Act took land from tribal nations through seizures, unratified treaties, and treaties. The Morrill Act of 1862 granted expropriation indigenous land to states in order to fund universities. Minnesota sold over 94,000 acres. The federal government paid $2,309 for these parcels. The state then sold the land for $579,000, or more than 250 times what the federal government paid for it. When adjusted for inflation, this windfall netted nearly 52 universities, roughly $500 million. The action under the Morrill Act was carried out throughout the U.S., and when these unscrupulous activities were finally revealed, it led several states and university campuses and university systems to try to make amends for those wrongs by offering free tuition to American Indian students. And I want to get back to this powerful presentation that we had about the impacts that the boarding schools had on our students. When you look at the, When you look on the, it's on the OHE website, and we have information about measurements and attainment level. And the 2020 data shows that American Indian students, their rates for graduation, attainment rates in college, and certificates and those types of credentials was 18% by American Indian students. And the attainment goal that we have in the state is 70%. So American Indian students are, there's a huge disparities gap. And then you look at the high school graduation rates, and American Indian students' graduation rates in 2019 was 51%, when all students was 84%. And I didn't mention that the all Minnesota attainment level for a higher education credential or certificate was almost 55%. So there is a huge gap there. This bill, and what I learned at that training at the that I went to this last fall, is that I really took away a sense of community that the Native Americans have in our community, and how close that their families are, and how close they are. And one of the persons had told me there is that they see a lot of their students and their children want to go to college close to home. And it started to make me think about creating opportunities for students to be able to have their education close to home, whether if they live by Bemidji or they live another part of the state, that they will be able to get their education. And so looking at the models that have been across the country and at the University of Minnesota, looked at ways in which we could have our American Indian students be able to get their college educations paid for, and trying to figure out a way to make that happen. And so what we did is looked into ways and building on the strengths that we have in the state. And we do have a Minnesota Indian Scholarship Program that students can get $4,000 for their undergraduate degree and $6,000 for their master's degree. In order to get our arms around this and be able to make sure that we're able to fund it and we don't have any waiting lists, what we looked at doing is doubling those scholarships for our undergraduate students. And then, so that's $8,000 for a scholarship, and then our graduate students, $8,000 as well. When we also took out eligibility requirements so that you don't have to get the language right, the Cal eligibility or have the state grant requirement in order to apply for this grant. And I have collaborated with Minnesota Indian Council in Minnesota, MIAC, and in coming up with this legislation, I've consulted with them and in close communication with them and the different tribal nations. And this proposal is what we're bringing before you to help the attainment level. When there is a child born in this state that is a Native American child, that their family knows that their child is going to have the opportunity to go to college, and there's not going to be barriers, and they can start knowing that they're a scholar at a young age and be able to get their education and help close these educational attainment gaps that we have in the state of Minnesota. So with that, I have three testifiers today, and I'll let you move through those and share your issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. And testifiers, we do ask that you keep your testimony to about 2 minutes so that we can end our committee on time. So first up, we have Tad Johnson. And Mr. Johnson, if you would state your name for the record, and you can proceed.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Bernardi and the rest of the committee. My name is Tad Johnson. I'm a professor at the University of Minnesota Duluth, and I'm also Senior Director of American Indian Tribal Nation Relations for the University of Minnesota System. But I'm not speaking on behalf of the university today. I'm speaking as a Boys Fort Band member and somebody who works with a lot of Native American students who come from an impoverished background who could really use this financial assistance. And so this, I'm speaking in very strong support of House File 4203. And I'm just going to make three quick points. There are many Native Americans in urban and rural areas of the state that are quite poor, and their path, I run two graduate programs. Their path to graduate school is usually through community college, possibly a state university, and it's not smooth. And some frequently that's because of life on the reservation, but sometimes it's just because of a lack of funding. And so this bill will help them finish college and possibly go to graduate school, which I have a personal interest in watching them do. Second, I just wanted to note that as Representative Bernardi said, the Morrill Act took so much land from Minnesota tribes under the treaties of 1851 in the southern part of Minnesota that 35 universities were created, not just small universities, but Cornell and MIT and other major universities. And so if this bill can help the less fortunate tribal members who want to finish college and go on, you know, I think it's a fair and just way to for the state to remedy this situation of the original thin of Minnesota, so to speak. And I just wanted to say that finally that I thank Chairwoman Representative Bernardi for introducing this legislation. I think it will make a huge difference for my graduate students who struggle to get through undergraduate years and graduate school. So thank you very much. And thanks for the committee.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Leanne Schmidt from Imber Hills Community College. Leanne, if you could please state your name for the record and proceed. Is Leanne here? I don't see her.
I believe that's actually from the wrong document. I believe next we have Angel Swan.
Okay, so who do we have next? On my list, I have, how about Axel Kylander?
No, that's from yesterday. Angel Swan is next.
Okay, next up we have Angel Swan. Please proceed and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Representative Christensen and members of the committee. My name is Angel Swan, and I'm a member of the White Earth Nation and a current student, a grad student at the University of Minnesota. I'm also a three-year recipient of the Minnesota Indian Scholarship. The Minnesota Indian Scholarship allowed me to get my undergrad degree with minimal debt. And that was a huge thing for me and my family, as I wasn't a burden, so I could get my degree and my family. I was able to focus on my studies, my internships, and not have to focus on working full time to make sure that I had rent and groceries in my fridge. I'm now attending grad school at the University of Minnesota, and Minnesota Indian Scholarship has also came through through my master's program. Increasing the amount of the scholarship would allow students to focus more on their studies and less on how to make ends meet and to provide for their family, which is what most Indigenous households are dealing with. It also allows first-generation students to be able to rely on this scholarship in order to go into their undergrad degree or graduate degree. By closing this educational gap of Indigenous students who are graduating and funding us more, we are able to continue on to higher education like graduate degrees. My hope is that you guys consider this bill and better funding so that money is not a barrier to gaining your education for Indigenous students. Thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you so much for your testimony. And next up, we have Zoe Jensen. Ms. Jensen, if you could state your name and proceed.
Hi, my name is Zoe Jensen. Thank you to everyone. My purpose for this bill to be passed is that coming into college, I had a lot of stress and strain when it came to financial aid, as I'm sure many Indigenous students do. With the help of this scholarship and increasing eligibility for many other students, like Angel Swan said, it gives other students the opportunity to engage in other activities, such as for me personally, I've been able to engage in a research program at the University of Minnesota alongside Professor Schneider. And through the extra financial support, we are able to engage in more so of a community, such as the University of Minnesota has coined, where leadership, equality, and inclusion are very much a staple within. It allows the students to not only focus on the importance of school, but also their culture. And I hope that this bill is passed because it gives many people the opportunity to consider grad school, any other type of professional programs they would like to go into. And yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Members, I do not see any public testifiers. So next we'll go to member questions. Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. I have a couple questions for Chair Bernardi, if you will. So I don't know if many of you are aware, but my mother was Native American. Sadly, she passed away in 2018, and she was part of the Cherokee Nation, I think, out of Missouri. I wish I could ask her. Trust me, I want to call her all the time. But so I do have a lot of questions regarding this, and I think the first one would be if Chair Bernardi could help me understand, like, what is the anticipated cost of this program going forward?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to defer to Nikki Oliver, who is on the call. We do not have a fiscal note yet back, but I would like to see if she could make a comment on getting our arms around this a little bit.
Ms. Oliver?
Hello, thank you, Madam Chair. And for the record, my name is Nikki Oliver, Grants and Government Relations Director for the Office of Higher Education. I'd actually to defer to Megan Fitzgibbon, who actually runs the MISP program with our agency, to answer the question. I could confirm the question was about the cost, right?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Oh, Megan Fitzgibbon would probably be better. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and Representative. I don't know that we have a specific cost for this set out. We do know how much it would cost in terms of doubling who our current applicants are, and we can certainly find that using these award or maximum award amounts in this bill. But we also the only thing we don't know is that this bill does change the eligibility requirements as it stands now. And so we don't know how many students out there might apply that haven't applied because they aren't currently eligible. So we can certainly figure out based on our current applicant base, but we'd have to do some estimates to figure out how many additional students might qualify that haven't applied in the past because they wouldn't meet the eligibility requirements under the current standard. I also want to note that in the statute for this program, we do have a mechanism for dealing with a situation where we might have too many applicants based on the funds that we have available. We do have a way to prioritize awards to applicants in the awarding procedure in the statute. So if there was a situation where we had more eligible applicants than funds available, we do have a way to deal with that in the statute.
Representative Matt Bunting.
Thank you, Madam Chair, which brings me to my next question. So, if I may, Chair Bernardi, within your bill, you're removing the need of base. So if it, that is precipiced on like whether or not they qualify. So can you help me understand, like, if they don't qualify, why didn't they qualify? Is it because they don't meet the eligible income requirements, or, you know, why are we removing this need of base from this? And then maybe you could probably expand on, would that in effect, like, potentially impact those that actually may need it more, if you could help me out with that one.
Thank you for your question, Representative Mecklen. And you cracked up when I was listening to it. So I think I heard your question, and I'll do the best I can. We tried to get our arms around this program and be able to get a decent fiscal note from the Office of Higher Education. We had other ideas on how to structure this, and it didn't have the limit of $8,000. It was the cost of attendance. But by having a limited number of dollars that a person could get, it helped get our arms around this. And there's a finite amount of people in Minnesota that could qualify for this. And so we wanted to structure it this way to be able to help get a good number for it, and then have a plan to make sure that the people most in need get it, and then also be able to, more importantly, we hope that it will be fully funded.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have one final question to Chair Bernardi. Within this bill, I mean, I read through this thing endlessly, and in this plan, are trade schools eligible for this as well?
Chair Bernardi. You're talking about our university and college system at Minnesota State?
I'm talking about any trade school, yeah, being eligible to teach a young person to try to find a career and find a better path in life, to have a decent income and have success. But would any trade school be eligible for this grant program?
I will defer to the Office of Higher Education, but anybody that's eligible now to read any of the colleges and universities and trade schools that currently can get it will be able to get it attending those. But I just want to make sure that we have we answer your question 100% correctly. So, Office of Higher Education,
Ms. Fitzgibbon?
Thank you, Chair and Representative. As for the statute, the eligible institutions include all accredited institutions located in Minnesota. So it includes all the trade schools, private and public, nonprofit, for-profit, et cetera. They just have to be accredited.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Perhaps Megan could expand on just for my institutional knowledge, being relatively new to this committee. What does accredited mean?
Accreditation is a process that is through various accreditation agencies, national agencies. It's required in order to participate in the federal financial aid programs. In Minnesota, many of the institutions are accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. There are other accrediting agencies across the nation that they do a number of different things, but the intent of them is to demonstrate that the institutions are doing what they're supposed to do, students are learning what they're supposed to learn, that they're completing their programs, that they're acting responsibly, those kinds of things.
Senator Mecklen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the responses, and I think I got most of my answers that I needed. I appreciate it. I'll let the others ask their questions and move forward. Thank you.
Lead O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I was just looking at the bill, and it looks like $3.5 million was what was crossed out, and it was now a blank appropriation. So we would assume we would double that plus more. And I honestly am not really sure why we're eliminating the needs part of it. So you've eliminated the requirement that it be a needs-based scholarship. And not like high needs, it's just how eligible.
Are you asking me, did I do that? Yes. Yes, I do. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I was asking more why. Why you eliminated the needs base.
I think that every Native American child born in this state ought to be able to have their education paid for. And that's why I took off the eligibility requirement.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Representative O'Neill.
My apologies. I don't normally do that. Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple things, as Ms. Fitzgibbons was talking, that this is, you can use this at an accredited college or institution, which makes sense, except for the fact that I believe we just had the three tribal colleges in who had said that they're not accredited. Am I remembering that correctly? So the three tribal colleges would not be eligible to receive this scholarship, if I'm following the path of all of this in the last few days correctly?
Chair Bernardi.
That would be a question for Ms. Fitzgibbon or Ms. Oliver.
Ms. Oliver?
Madam Chair and members, I think that was a misstatement yesterday, and I don't think that was the exact statement made yesterday, but the tribal colleges are accredited, same accreditation body as Minn State, so the HLC. So they are accredited, and they are, according to the statute, eligible institutions for students.
Lead O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, so they must have misstated saying that they were not accredited, and they'd have to, maybe that was Representative Keeler saying something about them not being accredited and not being, I mean, I know they're not part of the Minn State system. Fond du Lac is clearly a Minn State college, but the three tribal colleges were not part of the Minn State system. So I thought they had said something about they weren't fully accredited. Okay, well, that's a good thing. I'm a little bit concerned, though, that we're here and we're, first deadline is coming up the end of next week, and we don't know really what the cost of this is going to be. I guess we can assume that it's going to be about $7 million if I look at what the base appropriation was. Let me ask you, Chair Bernardi, really quickly, and this is our last quick question, just to clear up a few things. Again, a lot of things have been said, and just want to clear the air. So you don't have an appropriation here, so we're going to fill in an appropriation, but is this going to be an open appropriation, or are we going to have a cap? In other words, are you going to put, say, $7 or $8 million into it, and when it's gone, it's gone? Or is this going to be an open appropriation, and anyone that qualifies would be eligible, and it would just continue to appropriate until the need is met?
Chair Bernardi.
We have been exploring that, and I do not have the final answer how it will, where it will land, but probably what we're trying to do is have an appropriation that is made. And if we need to change that, then we'll have to figure out how to handle that. We just don't want there to be a waiting list.
Rep O'Neill, hold on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, thank you for that. Yeah, I was just waiting for you to acknowledge me.
Okay.
Appropriately. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think that as we're putting together our omnibus bill, I'm really hoping that we'll get those details. It's a little concerning that we don't have those details today. I would have liked to kind of have that in my file folder of what we're doing. So thank you, Madam Chair, and I look forward to more answers as we move forward.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair and Chair Bernardi. We previously discussed, or Representative Erickson had suggested, and I thought it was a good suggestion, there's a number of reports that we get from the Office of Higher Education, and we as a committee should be reviewing those. It's easier to have some committee time dedicated to that. And one of those was interesting to me that we have in our state an attainment goals for different minority and ethnic groups, and we're falling short on those. And I know the Office of Higher Education is on there. I think we've got a little bit of committee time left. If we could briefly go over that, and then I'll have a comment about that, because it's relative to your bill, and I think it's the intent of your bill is good. I was at that training. I'm trying to remember the proper name of it, but the Indian State Relations Training, or I apologize if that's not the exact name of the training, but I thought it was important to take the time to be up there, and I found it very interesting and beneficial. But relative to what I think your intent of your bill is, very good. Could we have some comments? And I know I'm kind of putting the department on the spot, but just kind of go over what these state attainment goals are, how we're meeting them, or are we falling short, and what are we doing to meet the legislative goals within that?
Is it Ms. Fitzgibbon? We are.
Maybe Ms. Oliver, but there's a couple people from the department. But Madam Vice Chair, I would like to see if Ms. Oliver has can give us the committee just a little overview on that.
Okay, I will say that we are over on this bill, and we have another bill coming up. But let's see if we can get a quick response here. So, Ms. Oliver.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. The Minnesota attainment goal that was established by the legislature in 2015, we are currently with all race and ethnicity demographics at 68% of the goal. But when you break that down by race and ethnicity, and I believe Representative Bernardi mentioned American Indians are only at, based on the 2021 data, only at 28% attainment, and that is attainment of certificate or higher, and they're disproportionately receiving certificates. So there are great disparities. The agency's mission, and we're constantly doing within our all of our programs, trying to increase attainment across the board in all aspects. So that's the brief, I guess, if the chair or members want us to talk more about the attainment goal, we'll be happy to.
Madam Chair.
Rep. Cosmic.
Thank you. Thank you for that slight overview, Ms. Oliver. I guess I'm disappointed that the committee hasn't taken, that's in legislative statute, a charge of this committee, that we haven't taken the time to go over that report. I think I would suggest that it would be good use of the committee time. But my concern is that we're not meeting the legislative goals, and we need to find out why or why not. And the goal is to have at least a 2-year certificate, not necessarily a 4-year college that many of us have talked about. 4-year college is not necessarily for everybody. And so my point to this bill relative to Chair Bernardi's bill is that we should be looking at all segments of minority groups to do of why we're not meeting that attainment goal. And this bill signals out one group, and we're failing the majority of minority populations in the state on meeting that goal. So I think there's more work to be done around this. Your intent is a valid one. It's something we should be discussing, but you're omitting African Americans, Latinos, Asians, many other ethnic groups that we do want to be successful in our state. And I think that's where your bill kind of falls short. So just wanted to share that with the committee, and maybe there's more work to be done. Chair Bernardi, thank you.
Chair Bernardi, closing.
Thank you, members, and appreciate the discussion. I'm glad we had it today, and I do not have any other closing remarks other than this is a very important bill for the students in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
So hearing no further discussion, I will renew my motion that House File 4203 be laid over for possible inclusion. The bill is laid over.
Okay, thank you very much. And we have on the agenda House File 2723 from Representative Noor. We now have 20 minutes and we will end at 4:30. I will move that House File 2723 be laid over for possible inclusion. We have before us House File 2723. Representative Noor, please present your bill to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Madam Chair, there was a slight error. I don't know if we wanted to do oral correction. We can do it later because the bill is being laid over. There was a slight correction. There's an A1 amendment.
There is an A1 amendment, and do we have that before the committee, or was it submitted?
I think it was submitted via email. It's a slight correction, a minor error in terms of the total amounts, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. I do not have that in front of me, and I'm going to talk to our committee administrator. Could you please?
I apologize, Madam Chair. I wasn't clear that this was an amendment that was being submitted for this hearing. I believe.
No, we can skip that. It's just a slight error in terms of the numbers. So thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 2723 appropriates $100 million to the University of Minnesota to address safety measures. This is a $90 million one-time only investment and $10 million ongoing to improve campus safety protocols and organization. Madam Chair and members, it's really important that we invest resources to address campus environment through practical, proven, strategic solutions to address public safety, health, and safety. This is intended to provide safety measures for students, staff, faculty, and neighborhoods surrounding the University of Minnesota. With that, because of time, I wanted to allow my testifiers to testify on this bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Noor. We will now move to Senior Vice President Myron France. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Christensen, members of the committee, Myron Franz, Senior Vice President for University Finance and Operations. Thank you, Representative Noor, for that introduction, and I'll move things along. I know we're short on time. What I wanted to do was take a few minutes, and then I'll introduce the other two testifiers for your benefit, was to spell out how that the safety and security of our students, faculty, and staff and visitors is one of the university's top priorities. We view safety from a very broad perspective, as Representative Noor mentioned. When we talk about safety, we think of it in the broad sense, IT safety and security, building and lab security safety, environmental safety, public health, mental health, prevention of sexual misconduct, and public safety. I would just spend a couple of minutes talking about what we're doing now. I will spend a few minutes talking about what we're doing now today to enhance safety on our campuses, all five campuses across the system. And then I'll let Chief Matt Clark and Vice President Gulichek describe their particular areas. But first of all, you know, one of the things the university has already invested more money in these ideas of safety. We've invested over $1.3 million on an ongoing basis and an additional $1.3 million in one-time investments because of the challenges we've had over the last several years. Some of the things that we've done in the last several years to address and, of course, and respond to safety really include we've added more visible MPD, UMPD patrols in and around campus. We've really maintained our quick responses to 911 calls and emergencies. We've added additional night security advisors. We've equipped and trained officers with body-worn cameras. We've provided escort services for students on campus late at night with our safety security folks. We have a mobile app to help people see what's going on. We've created a community engagement team. We've added a social worker to our Twin Cities or embedded a social worker in our Twin Cities campus public safety department. We've added a community liaison to work with our community engagement team. So we've really tried to invest in training and personnel to provide a really comprehensive response to safety needs on our campuses. And we've engaged with the faculty and the students on a number of reports. We had Dr. Alexander's report, take a look at what we could do on campus to make policing more safe and have people feel safe around policing as well. It's an ongoing effort. As Representative Knorr articulated, there are two parts to this request. The first part is a one-time request for $90 million for safety and security. Now, this is really to support our increased security efforts around all campuses. And one of the things we want to do is to make sure that we can respond quickly and effectively to emergency situations. But in order to do that, safety IT systems, emergency responders are really much more successful when our campuses have industry-recognized cameras, building access, and lighting systems in place. We've neglected these over time. It's like a lot of infrastructure issues. We need to increase and upgrade our infrastructure to provide that safety and security on all five campuses. I'll let both Chief Clark and Vice President Golichek talk a little bit about those issues. The $10 million recurring amount that we're requesting is really to support the university's commitment to providing a safe campus through advanced programming in public safety, student health, IT infrastructure, and health and safety. The proposal includes ongoing funding for system-wide cameras, building access, alarm monitoring, and personnel to manage the operations and maintenance of these security systems. This proposal will also fund additional uniform security and safety escort personnel, as well as additional police officers and first responders. We believe that funding these requests will help the university's efforts and will enhance our existing infrastructure to improve safety, security, and the health for all of our students, faculty, staff, and visitors. With your permission, Madam Chair, I'd like to invite Chief Clark to testify.
Okay, thank you. I had a little internet issue there. So I'm hoping you said Chief Matt Clark. Is that what you said? Okay, and welcome to the committee. And I just want to let you know we have 2 minutes for each of our remaining testifiers. So please proceed and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Matt Clark. I'm the Chief of Police at the University of Minnesota, and also I run the Public Safety Department of Public Safety for the university. The items that we have listed on funding requests really go involve getting all of our campus buildings, not just the Twin Cities campus, but all our other campuses, on the same access control, surveillance system, and as well managing the lighting. So if we're able to get every building for every student across the state at that same enterprise level that we should be at, which many of our Twin Cities buildings are on, I think that would also enhance safety for all of our students, faculty, and staff. All that information goes into our Emergency Communications Center, which would have a boost from this funding as well, so they can monitor the cameras, access, and student activity on all of our campuses across the state. Additionally, if we're able to secure the funding that we're requesting, we'd be able to have a strategic information center that allows us not only to have more situational awareness across the state, but improve our response to emergencies when we get the request from our students, faculty, and staff. Finally, we're asking for funding to eliminate the backlog of end-of-life equipment across the entire system. As you know, might know, 5,000 cameras we monitor just on the Twin Cities campus and a few other system campuses, and the end-of-life process for those cameras are coming to an end, and this funding would alleviate some of the end-of-life issues that we're having. Finally, we think that Blue Phone expansion, that's the emergency kiosk that we have on many Twin Cities areas, would best serve our system campuses as well. There's additional Blue Phone kiosks with surveillance cameras on each one of those items, and that's part of the funding request. Finally, we have seen an increase in safety and security requests across all of our campuses. We are asking for funding for university officers and security personnel so we increase our visibility, our response protocol, and our escorts across the campus. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have Vice President Bernie Golichek. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record, and we will have 2 more minutes for testimony. Thank you.
My name is Bernie Golichek. Thank you, committee members and Chair Bernardi, for having me here. As Chief Clark just explained, the University of Minnesota needs to make a significant investment in the way in which it secures and provides access to buildings. To do this, it needs to significantly enhance the security and access controls to the computer systems that serve as the brains to these safety measures. and at the same time enhance the security of systems that contain the university's critical and sensitive student, staff, and business data. Like many enterprises, the University of Minnesota is vulnerable to cybersecurity threats and ransomware attacks. These cyber attacks can result in the theft of the university's student data, or worse yet, alter that data so that students no longer have an accurate record of academic progress or degree received. In addition to the threat of data integrity, cyber attacks in the form of ransomware have the potential of locking university staff members out of systems, resulting in an inability for the university to function or even operate for days or even weeks. The way to mitigate these risks is to invest in modernized computer systems to adapt essentially to the threat environment. Simply put, we need to be relentless in the way that we manage these systems for vulnerabilities. And that's why this legislative request is so important. The specific University of Minnesota technology security investment that we propose here will be used to modernize the systems and foundational processes that are needed to secure and prevent inappropriate and unauthorized access. This benefit will enhance student, faculty, and staff by keeping sensitive and private data secure, preserving the integrity of the student and graduate academic record, and maintaining the continuity of the university's day-to-day operations by securing the university's most critical spaces and systems and preventing unauthorized access to them. Madam Chair, with your permission, I'd like to turn this back to Senior Vice President Franz to conclude. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Senior Vice President Byron Franz, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we appreciate the opportunity to be here today in front of the committee. We appreciate your interest and your concern about these issues. What we hope to do is to request these funding efforts to enhance our existing infrastructure, improve safety, security, and the health for our students. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Thank you very much. See, we have Representative Daniels' hand up. Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a few questions for the author.
That would be great. Representative Daniels, what we'll do now is we'll give every member opportunity to ask a couple of questions. And we can maybe do three because I only see two hands up. We can do three and then go back to you after that. I want to make sure that we have the opportunity to get everyone's questions asked today. So Representative Daniels, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Knorr, in that $100 million, could you break down how much the amounts are for like security cameras, door security, police officers, those type of things? Do you have a breakdown of that for us so we can better understand the bill?
Representative Neuer.
Madam Chair, Representative Daniels, I think you have it online posted, the breakdown of every amount on that one, including the additional security advisors and the number of additional officers. So this is more beyond policing. It provides more support for the IT and everything else is included. I believe it's online. It's called Public Safety Cost Summary. It should be in the package.
Okay.
Thank you. Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually have that. I just was surprised when I got it that out of the $100 million, we're going to be spending $1.69 million on officers and equipment and safety security advisors. Very small amount. That's like a 1.6% out of $100 million. And in my humble opinion, and I'm not an expert by any means, but the best deterrent is to have more officers on the ground, boots on the ground, so that people know they won't get away with it if they try to do a carjacking or rob somebody at gunpoint. So I was a little surprised, perplexed at the small amount that was going in for officers. Madam Chair, may I ask another question?
Oh, yes. Go ahead, Representative Daniels.
Thank you. Representative Knorr, also looking back at past voting history, I'd like to know what has changed since June 2021 when the author voted no on two different amendments from the GOP to increase funding for the campus safety.
Excuse me, Representative Daniels, I've never heard of this happening in my committees before when I've served here for my 16th year of talking to the author about their votes on the floor. Is that what you're doing right now? Am I understanding this correctly?
Madam Chair, I'm trying to find out what has changed in less than a year about support for more police officers on the University of Minnesota. We've had try to get two amendments through in the last year to add security measures at the University of Minnesota, but we were voted down both times. Just want to know what the change from June of 2021 till now. What's
changed? So am I understanding this? You're asking him why he has changed his vote, and I don't know if that's I don't know that that's an appropriate question for this committee. So, Representative Knorr, if you, I'm not going to ask you to answer the question, but if you want to, you may proceed.
Madam Chair, as you already noted, this goes into motives and also things that we are not covering here today.
Exactly. Thank you. So, Representative Daniels, do you want to even ask him, you want to ask a third question? That is fine, and then we'll move to Representative Neal, and we can go back to you if you have more questions, if we have time. So thank you. Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Another thing that's been kind of confusing is the contract with the Minnesota Police Department. Maybe the author could explain. I got a letter from May of 2020, said that they were not going to use the Minneapolis Police Department for large events or specialty services like canine bomb sniffers, and just where it stands. Because I've had kind of two different answers to that question.
Representative Knorr.
Madam Chair, as I understand, there's ongoing relationship between the University of Minnesota and the Minneapolis Police Department in St. Paul. In fact, even an accident that happened yesterday in my district, the MPD were there, the university, law enforcement, UMPD were there. So this is not going to end. As I've seen many incidents within the district, I represent almost all the neighborhoods in the district. I've seen that collaboration when it comes to the need of safety for all our communities surrounding the university.
Thank you. And you can leave your hand up if you want, Representative Daniels, we can come back to you if we have time. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to go back to the language of the bill. And it's a very simple bill. It's a very simple appropriations bill. And I realized that we got a spreadsheet from the University of Minnesota, but and that's nice, but they are incredibly autonomous, as we all know. So the ask in the appropriation of the bill is $100 million and $10 million, continuing on. So $90 million one-time appropriation and $10 million continuing. But of course, in the bill, it doesn't break down what it's for. It just has general categories. Just for the public's sake, as they're listening to us, it just says through the advanced measures in public safety, health and safety, information technology, infrastructure, and student health. So it's very, very broad. I just want the public to know that the actual language of the bill is incredibly broad. And even though they've provided a spreadsheet of what they intend to use it for, it doesn't mean that that's what they have to use it for. They are a land grant institution that predates statehood. And we have to be incredibly careful as a legislature how we ask the University of Minnesota to do certain things. So I just want to absolutely point that out to the public that this is $100 million, again, $10 million in the tails, $90 million one time. And it's in the language of the bill itself, it's incredibly broad. So they could spend it all kinds of different ways. We do have the spreadsheet that has been posted that's specific. I would note, too, that the specificity in the spreadsheet from the University of Minnesota has very little for actual officers. As they stated in their testimony, it's mostly for hardening buildings and updating security systems, getting into buildings, so access to the buildings. The last thing I would say, just for the public record, is that, this week has been an interesting week. We had tribal colleges come, and it wasn't in the appropriations bill, but the ask was $1 million
for each of the three tribal colleges that are not part of the MnState system. And of course, Fond du Lac, as we've said multiple times, is part of the MnState system. And I just wanted to, you know, this is a $100 million ask compared to what Representative Keeler said just yesterday, that that's just our tribal colleges were asking for just $1 million each. The other thing is, you know, the University of Minnesota system is a very large system. They have expansive resources. As I've said before, too, they've given raises, they've eliminated sports programs, and so on. So this is an awfully big ask. $100 million is an awfully big ask. They came with just a general appropriation ask of $250 million. So I'm not sure if this is on top of or inclusive of the $250. My guess is it's probably tucked in the $250 million, but this is an awfully big ask. And I'm not supportive of this very, very large ask, particularly when much of this is not really people on the ground, boots on the ground, and officers on the ground. It's really other things. So it's, I think it's a little over a million for new officers, million and a half maybe. That's all I have to say. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Neal. Seeing no further questions, Representative Noor, would you like to make closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I ask for your support. This is about public safety and addressing the needs, not only the Twin Cities University of Minnesota. This is one-time investment that will go a long way. And thanks to Senator Jasinski and also Senator Rarick for co-sponsoring the bill in the Senate. So thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you, Representative Neuer, and to our testifiers. Hearing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 2723 be laid over for possible inclusion. The bill is laid over. I want to thank all of our testifiers today who came and testified, and we will be meeting Tuesday, March 22nd. The meeting is adjourned.